This is New Tech City, WNYC's weekly look at how technology is changing the way we live. I'm Anoush Zomorodi. So maybe you heard last week how WhatsApp was, yes, bought by Facebook for about $19 billion. Well, WhatsApp is just one big player among a new crop of chat apps that are growing more and more popular. Competitors like WeChat, Viber, Line, Kick. They do text messaging on smartphones, calls too sometimes, and they do them cheaper and faster than regular text messaging. But they also do a better job of sending video, pictures, and other imagery. In fact, that's why some of them are so popular. And so we were wondering if these new visual tools are opening doors for improving communication, especially for people who really think visually.
Try adding a sticker right now. I'm going to show you something new, Alex.
Meet Liza.
Oh, yeah?
And
oh, yeah.
Alex.
All right.
Okay.
They've been together for almost 2 years. They live together. She's a visual thinker. He's not. And they're going to see if using these visual tools on these new apps.
Oh, those are adorable. Look at those pandas and chickies.
No matter how weird they are, well, if they could possibly improve their relationship.
Or how about the egg that's on fire?
Oh, I haven't seen that one yet.
So Alex is actually New Tech City senior producer Alex Goldmark. Hi, Alex.
Hi, Manoush.
And you did a little digging, and you found out that you are by no means the first person to try to replace words with images.
That's right.
So I'm Richard Sprout, and I have a PhD in linguistics from MIT back in—
Manoush, he worked for AT&T Bell Labs. He's been an academic.
I am now a research scientist at Google. And in general, I'm interested in how we can use graphical symbols to communicate.
This guy knows talking with pictures inside and out. And he says people have been using pictures to communicate since the dawn of written language or even before it.
If you look at the history of the development of writing systems, going back, say, to Egyptian, to Sumerian, to ancient Chinese, all of them started out with at least some components of what you might call ideographs. So there were pictures of things.
An ideograph is like a drawing of a dog. It is the idea of the dog straight into your brain. You see it, you think of a dog. Now, if you see the word D-O-G, you read it, you maybe say the sounds in your head, maybe you say the word dog in your head, then poof, a picture of a golden retriever.
Okay, so that's what images are better at.
Right.
They're more instant, faster comprehension for simple messages.
For simple message. His main point is that images are certainly getting easier to share now and to incorporate into text communications because of smartphones so that they're enhancing communication, but not much more than that, he says.
But it's limited, right? I mean, there's how many emojis are there? Maybe a few hundred, a few thousand. But if you think about the vocabulary of the average speaker is in the many tens of thousands of words.
And that's just in our heads. A dictionary has hundreds of thousands of words. So we're never going to replace words with pictures the way Sprout sees it. Not all words, anyway. And he feels pretty sure that we won't because somebody tried to do it.
Ah.
Like really, really tried for years and years to make a language completely out of symbols. This starts during World War II. The man's name is Charles Bliss.
He was an Austrian Jew who was actually interned for a while in, I think, in Dachau and Buchenwald.
His wife gets him out, though, and they have to flee. Bliss has a cousin in Shanghai, so they head east to a place with a completely different language, with symbols.
He was kind of bitten by the bug that many people who were first exposed to Chinese writing are bitten by, which is the idea that, oh, these symbols convey meanings directly. They're ideographic. What's wrong? We know Chinese writing doesn't work that way.
But the idea sticks. What if the symbols could represent ideas directly?
I mean, I can totally understand why that would appeal to him. Bliss is there in China. He's an Austrian refugee wishing he could communicate better.
Exactly. And he imagines instead of dog, D-O-G, or the Chinese symbol that you have to memorize for dog, instead we could have a graphic representation of dog that everyone, even a toddler, would know what it meant.
Intuitive, simple. You look at it. I mean, you still have to learn it, but it would come naturally because it was so simple.
That's the promise and the hope of symbols, or what Charles Bliss called, you're going to like this, Bliss symbols.
I do like that.
It would be very easy to learn them. And once you learn them, you would be able to communicate anything to anybody in the world. Kids wouldn't be illiterate because it would be so easy to learn this. It was kind of a universal brotherly love kind of idea.
A global language, kind of like what
Esperanto was supposed to be in a way, but visual.
Same idea.
It's awesome.
For physically reading, not for translating into computer. And Bliss spends decades on this. He's making thousands of these Bliss symbols. He moves to Australia, and he even then gets some support from some big intellectual names like Bertrand Russell, the British philosopher. So Bliss plods on to try and make it a complete language, which is where it gets complicated.
If he wanted to represent different kinds of waterfowl, well, you've got a duck. Well, you can represent a bird over the water. Okay, that gives you duck. Well, what about swan? Well, that's going to be waterfowl number two. And then goose would be waterfowl number three. I may have got these backwards. But the point is, you know, you have these arbitrary indices. You have to learn it, and it becomes every bit as complicated as an ordinary writing system.
So it just collapses when you get past a certain point, basically.
Right, except Bliss wasn't totally wrong about the power for simple symbols. That's why they're still around today.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
The way the system is used today, it is still in use. It's used by children who have severe cognitive deficits and severe communications disorders, basically mentally retarded, severe autism, who will probably never be able to speak using ordinary language, but do seem to be able to communicate using a small set of these symbols, maybe a few hundred of these or a few thousand of these symbols. It seems to be effective for that.
That was Google's Richard Sprout. His book is Language, Technology, and Society. And what an amazing story about a man named Charles Bliss. So to hear all that, plus advice for Alex from a person who actually designs emoji icons for a living, and also someone who translated all of Moby Dick into emojis, Emoji Dick, well, it's all on our full New Tech City podcast this week. Go to newtechcity.org. It gets pretty intimate.
I think the parts that worked really well were for communicating emotions and feelings.
So sometimes during the day, I'll text you things like, I love you. And this week, I couldn't do that. I had to use images. And most of the images that were in our apps that we used happened to be like cartoon characters. Mm-hmm. How would you say it made you feel to get these creatures compared to when I text you?
It was so much better.
I'm Anoush Zomorodi, and this is New Tech City from WNYC.